Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is June 3rd, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of John. We're picking up tonight on chapter 19. The Gospel of John, chapter 19, read by Alexander Swoby.
Chapter 19. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe and said, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again, and saith unto them, "Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him." Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate saith unto them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests therefore and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate saith unto them, "Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the judgment hall, and saith unto Jesus, "Whence art thou?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Then saith Pilate unto him, "Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and have power to release thee?" Jesus answered, "Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin." And from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, "If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth, and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the Pavement, but in the Hebrew, Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour. And he saith unto the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate saith unto them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Then delivered he him therefore unto them to be crucified. And they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him, and two other with him, on either side one, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." This title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew and Greek and Latin. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, "Write not the King of the Jews, but that he said, 'I am King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts, to every soldier a part, and also his coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. They said therefore among themselves, "Let us not rend it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be." That the scripture might be fulfilled, which saith, "They parted my raiment among them, and for my vesture they did cast lots." These things therefore the soldiers did. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother, and the disciples standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, "Woman, behold thy son." Then saith he to the disciple, "Behold thy mother." and from that hour that disciple took her unto his own home. After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. Now there was set a vessel full of vinegar, and they filled a sponge with vinegar, and put it upon hyssop, and put it to his mouth. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, It is finished. And he bowed his head, and gave up the ghost. The Jews therefore, because it was the preparation, that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, for that Sabbath day was an high day, besought Pilate that their legs might be broken, and that they might be taken away. Then came the soldiers, and brake the legs of the first, and of the other which was crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus, and saw that he was dead already, they brake not his legs. But one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith came there out blood and water. And he that saw it bare record, and his record is true. And he knoweth that he saith true, that ye might believe. For these things were done, that the scripture should be fulfilled, A bone of him shall not be broken. And again another scripture saith, They shall look on him whom they pierced. And after this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, besought Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him leave. He came therefore and took the body of Jesus. And there came also Nicodemus, which at the first came to Jesus by night, and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pound weight. Then took they the body of Jesus, and wound it in linen clothes with the spices, as the manner of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new sepulchre, wherein was never man yet laid. There laid they Jesus, therefore, because of the Jews' preparation day, for the sepulchre was nigh at hand.
Okay, Ken, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
Yes, we have several.
Yeah, go ahead, Jan.
Okay, the first one is, Hello, on July 6th, I have a hearing where I will be contesting a ticket I was given by a California Highway Patrol officer for exceeding their speed limit. I recorded the incident and explained to the officer that I was a sovereign being traveling to and fro in my personal vehicle, not conducting any sort of commercial business. I refused to sign the ticket, and the officer threatened to have me arrested and have my car impounded. I've learned a lot, but I don't have the level of nomenclature that I would like to have when I go into court next week. Can you please assist me with explaining to them that I'm aware that they are committing fraud against me? I will not be participating in the theater production. I know not to cross the bar and not to respond when asked if I was representing my all caps legal fiction name that I was assigned at birth.
Okay, that's the end of that?
Yeah, that's the end of that.
Okay, well, first of all, you're doing a lot of things that I think is wrong. The cop doesn't understand anything, and he's only going to do what he's told. And some of these officers will get upset with you, and who knows what could happen. Like he said, he may threaten to arrest you. So there's no need to bother with trying to deal with the problem with the officer that is trying to give you a ticket. I always thank them when I'm done, but I'm very polite with them. More often than not, they don't even give me a ticket. But let's say half the time, I might get a ticket. And then I usually write a paper challenging jurisdiction. There's been times when they never even responded after that and didn't get no court date and all just fell away. There are times when they pulled me in and it was easier for me to pay the ticket. But I decided not to pay the ticket anymore. I'm in the middle of something right now. And I've been sharing this on some of the paperwork. So if you go under up to nationallibertyalliance.org under today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos. And you come down a bit, you'll come to Monday Night Open Forum for 4/29/24, traffic court follow-up. Now, if you come, I think it's maybe two Mondays before that. I know earlier we did. Here it is. If you go to 4/8/24, which is probably the first one you want to watch, and we focused in on how to deal with village, towns, and cities and counties, particularly the courts, but also dealing with the problems. So the first one you really, well, I'm sorry, one before that is the one you want to watch. It's 4/1/24, the town, village, traffic, and administrative courts. You could deal with, no matter what the code violation is, you could deal with it the same way. So if you watch this, you'll get a lot of information on that. You'll also be shown where you can download some paperwork that you can make your own and file with the courts. And I have a series of paperwork. As a matter of fact, I do have another one that I do want to share because I moved my case into the state court for cause. And I'm not going to be sharing that tonight, but there are some other things I want to look at and discuss tonight. But maybe next week, if we have the time, I'll do another one on traffic court. So again, 4/1/24. And the other one you want to watch would be... Monday night open forum 4/29/24, which is a traffic court follow-up. And if I can get to it next week, I'll put another one up, and it'll be another follow-up. And I'm just posting the responses and how I respond back to them. There is no way for them to respond to prove that they have jurisdiction, because it's a challenge of jurisdiction is what it is. They cannot prove it. And in their own courts, they'll claim that they can, and he'll just say, or she'll just say, whatever the judge may be, you know, I decided to have jurisdiction, so let's move on. I've had that done to me, and I've seen other people have that done to me, to them. So you don't really get anywhere with that, but you do have to start your challenge in that court first, and then move it into the state court. The other thing you need to do, and this is extremely important, I know in New York it's definitely a requirement. You cannot move a case when you're challenging in a town court, or, and this is their rules anyway. They're not real rules. I mean, this is what they make up. It's not the way it should be. But in any event, they'll claim that unless you came in under special appearance, you cannot challenge jurisdiction. And whatever strategy or philosophy or logic that they use to make that claim, it's irrelevant, and I have no clue. But in New York, they do have statutes where they talk about this in the state courts, that if you don't challenge jurisdiction, if you don't come with a special appearance, and you need to come with a special appearance anyway, special appearance is for the purpose of testing the jurisdiction of the court. And in this case, it's the personam jurisdiction. They do have subject matter jurisdiction for commercial code violations, but they don't have subject jurisdiction over the people. And that's how you can win in court. Now, again, you're up against evil. We're going to see where they're going to go here in New York with my case. Worst case scenario, I'm going to have to pay the fine. Otherwise, they'll remove my license. Not that I need a license to drive. But my position in court, if they were to make a claim or anything, well, I've got a license because I have driven commercially, and I might drive commercially again, so I keep it. And also, other than that, it's a good form of ID. Everyone will accept a driver's license as a form of ID for whatever you're doing. So for those two reasons is my claim on why I have it. But right now, you know, and if they would ask, well, why'd you give it to the cop? Well, he asked for it, and I didn't think it was wise not to, because he's ignorant of the law. No one teaches him anything. They do nothing except for what they're told. So, and that's the bottom line. But anyway, go watch those videos, and you'll get a lot of detailed information. And like I said, hopefully next week I'm going to follow up on another paper that I filed in the state court. Okay, next question, Jan. Dan, you must be muted.
You are so right.
I know.
A PHP citation. The FOIA that I received from the below citation was not what I had requested, so I contacted City Hall and told them how deceptive they are being with me and that they ripped me off for $25. I got a message this morning from the lieutenant, but my husband said I should talk to John before returning the lieutenant's call. I don't know if the lieutenant knows that I have the court copy of the citation. During the messages back and forth with City Hall, I've had to exert my unalienable rights because I didn't want them making a copy of my ID. So they are aware that I know my power as one of the people. After I canceled a recent citation, looks like she's repeating it. Yeah. According to Judge Dale, lawfully yours, with some added verbiage, I did a public records request on the citation. Body cam, dash cam, all emails to and from the officer and superiors. Something very interesting happened. They gave me the original court copy with the records. Have you ever heard of the court giving up their copy to the defendant?
This was a copy of what?
The court records.
You know, well, they don't exist no more. There's no more to pursue because they have no paperwork to even schedule you, if that's what they actually did do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, actually, that's a win, in a sense, because of an error that they made. So I don't know what else to say about that. Judge Dale, I remember reading that a long time ago, but if I recall, it's been a while back, there was some problems with that. His position and thinking and claims, and I after I learned about Anna von Ritz and some other people, I'm beginning to wonder whether he was a judge that worked for the state, you know, or a town or something, or whatever, or just a self-appointed judge. So I really don't know, but again, I'm pretty sure I recall that Judge Dale has some flaws in his thinking, as far as how to respond and deal with these things. You know, the best way to deal with them is, use due process and what's available in due process. And part of due process is jurisdiction. And if they don't have jurisdiction, and certainly no town, no village, no city, in most cases anyway, no city, and no county court. Well, and that's not true in a county court, because a county court is a court of record, or supposed to be a court of record anyway. But the town, the village, and most city courts, don't have any authority over the people. They don't have personam jurisdiction, especially in any kind of a case that exists at civil law, which is pretty much all of them, commercial law, which is traffic violations. So pretty much they don't have any jurisdiction over the people at all. But you give them jurisdiction the moment you plea. And if you don't plea, they're going to do everything they can to force you to plea. They're going to try to push you to get a lawyer. They'll go as far as making a plea for you. The judge will say, well, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a plea for you as not guilty. Let's move on in this case. And you have to deal with all that. I don't even let them get to that point because, again, I start right off the bat. I file a paper immediately coming in as a special appearance. I shared that paper on those videos. And denial of jurisdiction. They don't have it. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided and it must be proven that they have it. They can't do that. And again, they're going to play with you. I remember dealing with a court case with an individual once. We were in court for 8 months. Like every month he'd come back. Every month. We didn't know what to do at the time. It was very early on. And we were trying to figure the next step out. We just kept bringing him up every month. And until we started to bring up certain things and learn certain things, and you know, this was for a criminal case, by the way, in a town court. So, and they certainly, even though they call themselves criminal courts in some cases, I know here in New York, the court that I'm dealing with right now says it's a criminal court, but it's a town court, and that's in the civil law, And if they're going to come out after you criminally, then where's the, where is the jury that indicted you? Where is the indictment? They don't have an indictment because they can't get an indictment. So there's a lot of different things. So it depends on what's going on also. But Judge Dale, I don't, if I'm pretty sure I remember, there were major flaws in his thinking, and I wouldn't use that strategy. Common law is the best way to go. Just use the law. Call the fraud a fraud if you have to. When you get to it, they won't bring it up. They're not going to talk about your cap letters. I don't write my name in cap. I do put their name in cap, but I don't write my name in cap, and they can do whatever they want. Doesn't matter. It really doesn't hold any power or authority. But I don't think that individual understands that they probably, well, they got their papers back, which was an accident probably, so if that's the case, they're out. They're not going to be contacted anymore. So, next question.
That's all of the questions for tonight, John.
Okay, great. No announcements?
No.
Okay, last week we spent the whole 2 hours on looking at, matter of fact, anybody that missed it, they can go get it, the Writ Quo Warranto, Restoration of Our Republic. We talked a little about solar flares, EMPs, and restitution. The restitution we're looking for is the restitution of the destruction that they have done to America. And we're going to be talking a little more about that as time goes on, specifically restitution. We're working on some paperwork now, and hopefully be sharing it. We did look at the Writ Quo Warranto a little bit. You know, we didn't read the whole thing. I don't know that we're going to end up reading the whole thing. We have read the whole thing back in 2015, 2016. I think it was 2016 where we read it into our program, so it can be found. And I do believe we have it on video also, so it was a Monday night program that we did record and on video and posted the video. And now we are posting all of our Monday night programs in video and audio. Anybody who wants to download the MP3s, you'd come into Monday Night Call, click on Monday Night Call, and just scroll down a little bit, and this is where the page where you got all the information on how to join us here, and you can download or just listen to online all of our videos. We've been recording for quite some time. Let me see how we go back to 2012. So we've been recording for a long time. So we have every recording since then. So. Now, we do have some people in the queue right now, but before we go into the queue, I do want to bring something up, and that is the 13th Amendment. This is extremely important, and we wrote that Writ Quo Warranto, which I believe was 15 pages plus 3 pages of introduction to the Writ Quo Warranto. So it was a total of, 18 pages, maybe 19. And there was quite a few memorandums attached to that. And one of the memorandums attached to that was the original 13th Amendment. And this is it here. It is available up on our website. If you want to read the full thing, because we're not going to read the entire thing, it's going to read a paragraph or two, small paragraphs. But you can go to, of course, our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight federal court cases, come down to action against the judiciary. And again, we've been working on this since 2015, and our anticipation is hopefully to bring this to a close by the end of this year. And with a Writ Quo Warranto, for those who don't know what that is, it's a declaration by the sovereign. It is a writ of the people, a writ of the sovereign, the king. And requiring an explanation of who they are, their jurisdictions, and by what authority they act. And that's what a Writ Quo Warranto is. If you don't answer a Writ Quo Warranto within a specific period of time, and I think it's a very short period of time, if I recall, I have to go back and look, but I think it's 7 days. If you were to draw up, if the law was being applied, of course we didn't expect the law to be applied, but if the law was going to, we did this for the future, really, is what we do. We've been building a case since 2015, and the finale is this year. If a town does not respond to a Quo Warranto within 7 days, or an individual holding a particular office, or any of these agencies that are directly related to the people, they do not respond, they cease to continue. They have to forfeit their office, their position, or whatever the case may be. So it's a very powerful paper. Now they got rid of the writ quo warranto by the sovereign, the writ mandamus, and numerous other writs. All the sovereign writs they got rid of, at least on the federal level, and the states all followed through with the same thing that the federal level did, because our whole judicial process is totally corrupt. And the federal rules of civil procedure, which has nothing to do with me, I always make that point when I go into the court, has to do with you guys maybe, but nothing to do with me, can't apply that upon me. In Rule 60, well, Rule 2, they abrogated the common law. Of course, they can't do that, but they think they can. Because of our ignorance, I speak to myself first, but I'm no longer ignorant, but because of our ignorance, they've done whatever they wanted. People think that a judge rules in a court case. The judge cannot rule in a court case. They don't have the power or the authority to make any decisions about you. They can only really just do an arraignment and set forth the law, and usually they release most people as long as they are not an individual that they're concerned about running. Doesn't have roots in the community or something like that, maybe, and maybe they'll want you to put some money up or something. Of course, they make everybody put a lot of money up because they do this to everybody. And of course, if it's a violent crime, then of course, that's a reason to hold the individual at least until they're going to make a decision on what's going to happen with your case. But the decision-making is by the people. The government can't do anything without the authority of the people. But the people don't know that because they had never learned that. Just look at the juries. They can't arrest the person and charge them with a criminal charge unless they first go to the people and get an indictment. Of course, if they catch them in the action, they can get the indictment afterward. Before arresting them. But if they're caught in the action, of course, then they're arrested and they go for the indictment. But in any event, an indictment is required. And without an indictment, without the request to the people to get an indictment, yay or nay, they can't do anything. But they've taken control of the juries. All the grand juries are stacked grand juries. They're controlled. The prosecutor, who's not permitted to see a grand jury, is the only one who does go in to see the grand jury. Because the whole thing's fixed and they're protecting themselves, and they get their ham sandwich. The other thing is, in a case, any case that's being judged, you have the juries. Now, with a jury decides innocence or guilt. They get to decide the facts. They get to decide the law. They get to decide the restitution or the punishment or both. And that's it. The judge gets to decide anything. All their written law doesn't get to decide anything. But of course, all of our ignorance, we fall into this plan that they have laid out for us. And so we all get trapped into this system. Common law does not permit a man to judge another man. Not possible. Only the people can judge another person. That's why they put the people of New York or whatever state goes against your name or whatever the case may be. They just operate in our name. They don't get the will of the people. All the juries that I've seen and become aware of, most of them, if not all of them, pretty much are stacked. It's part of the process in the system that they set up. They're stacked juries. There's no such, when a jury makes a decision, anybody holds out, just all it takes is one person to hold out on a decision in the jury. And if they can't move forward, the judge may try to call it a hung jury. In common law, no such thing as a hung jury. Doesn't exist. In common law, if the jury comes to the judge and says, there's no judge. By the way, there's no judge in a court of law. There's a magistrate only. So if the jury comes to the magistrate and says, we're stuck, go back and stay there, do what you got to do till you get the job done. You don't leave. That's it. You want to be there days, weeks, months, It's your business. You're going to be there. At some point, the people have to come to the point that they're not going to get a solution. You've got just one person is holding out. And if that's the case, then they got to come back with a not guilty. And that's the end of it. That person can never be tried again. That's common law. Double jeopardy is a problem with a hung jury. And we have a, it's in our Constitution that double jeopardy, you know, there's a problem. And you can't take a person two times into the court for the same issue. So a lot of people just don't realize this, okay? And until we realize this, we're not going to take our courts back. But that's what we're preparing to do, is trying to take our courts back. Last week we spoke about the military involvement with us here, and that they had used our paperwork, which was that writ quo warranto, to file up against, because they saw the file, and we filed it everywhere. And they used that as a leverage. We just found that out last week. And hopefully we're going to find out some more on what's going on with that. But we're doing the follow-up paperwork on that now. But what I really want to follow up just quickly, and then we're going to go to the Q&A. If anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. There should be a button to enter the queue, since we opened the queue, if you're on an app. But I want to talk just a couple of minutes here about this 13th Amendment, okay? Is this it? No, that's not it. Let's see. Did I lose it? Let this know. Oh, I think this is it. This is a memorandum of law on the original 13th Amendment. And as I mentioned, you can find this in here underneath federal court cases, come down, action against the judiciary, and you should find it down in here. We filed a lot of papers. We filed a lot of court cases. Here's our memorandums, and I think we filed some more a little further down. We filed a lot of cases that we moved for cause into the federal court, habeas corpuses. We moved a case for New York Safe Act into the federal court. We did denials of habeas corpus and felony rescues, and so we came in and did indictments on these judges. Also, we've filed a lot of indictments for denial of due process and felony rescue in a lot of state courts. So we did federal courts and state courts. And there's a lot of paperwork here. We did a murder conspiracy indictment on Leroy Finnegan. It was a 24-page murder conspiracy indictment. And we also filed papers on a judge who concealed and felony rescue of that indictment. But all this is still on the record, and the United States military has resurrected this for us. So it is now an issue in the court system, and they're aware of it, and we're getting ready to do the file-up, which the 13th Amendment is going to play a major role in this issue. And again, we have a lot of memorandums, and there's a lot of things going to play a lot of roles, but the 13th Amendment is going to be a very powerful one. We speak often about getting rid of the Bar Association. We speak often about getting rid of the political parties. Both of those things don't belong with a republic nor with our law as a constitutional republic that we are, a natural law constitutional republic. But on the 13th Amendment, which is an extremely powerful amendment, and it was passed ultimately in, I think it was, 1818, but I think it surfaced, we'll go through the memorandum, we'll find out the time period, I don't remember exactly, but I think it surfaced originally, our founding fathers put this forward, because when they wrote in the Constitution, they talked about positions of, not of honor, but they talked about nobility, positions of nobility. And they really didn't make it strong enough, so they went back and they added a 13th Amendment. Now, 13th Amendment disappeared before 1865 when the 14th Amendment came out. So it just kind of disappeared. Well, we have plenty of proof that it actually existed. And here's what it says, okay? Now, remember, a position of honor is what, in the case of bar attorneys, is an esquire. Esquire is one step below a knight. So they have positions of honor. They're called esquires, and it's part of the bar, the BAR, which is the British Accredited Registry. We have the ABA, which is American registry, but it is underneath and brought together from the British, so it's part of a foreign process. It still leaks back to the British registry. And here's what it says. This is a very short, really a statement in the amendment. So it's a very short amendment. Amendment 13, if any citizen, and make note, it's a citizen, any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, that's an esquire, or shall, without the consent of Congress, accept or retain any present pension, office, or emolument of any kind whatever from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, and this is a foreign power, it's a foreign court, leads right back to England, but even if it didn't, it's still a foreign court because the courts right now are foreign courts to us. They're Babylonian courts. They're not courts of law. So any office of emolument of any kind, whatever form, any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them or either of them. And that's it. Very short amendment. Our founding fathers put this in. They missed the mark on the original. I know on the original, this is my concierge. Let me see if I can find this quick enough on the original Constitution, what the clause they put in here concerning. So I think it's Article 1, I think it's Section 9.
I think you're right. Article 1, Section 9, maybe Clause 18 or so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here it is. No title of nobility. See, they missed. One of the things they missed here is the title of honor. Okay. That's why I think they came in with the 13th Amendment. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office or profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from the king, prince, or foreign state. Now, they expounded on that because they realized that that was a problem. Our founding fathers had a major problem with bar attorneys, the British attorneys that came into the colonies and trying to enforce their civil law and try to destroy our common law. And that started actually in the colonies back in 1750 and continued. But it got really bad, really hardcore, when the revolution was starting to brew. And after the papers were written, after the Federalist Papers, the debates and everything took place and the Constitution was actually written and was put out, they realized that they forgot something. And there was probably a lot of things going on in the courts, a lot of problems with the bar and so on and so forth. So they wrote this up and they put it into the law. And so it is the original 13th Amendment. That disappeared. Now, they took the 13th Amendment, which dealt with slavery, and the 14th Amendment really needs to be combined. They both came out at the same time. But they divided it so that they can separate and make a different, get rid of the original 13th Amendment. But there's lots of records in a lot of the state records. It's all over the place. We do have all of the different documents that we have accumulated concerning where this is actually found. In the records of many, many states and many, many different places. So this plays an important role. Once this is applied, because we're going to apply this in our next, it's going to be a demand. We're coming by memorandum, and we're going to demand that every officer of the court remove themselves from the bar immediately, or they will cease to be citizens of the United States. And we will deport them, because they're no longer citizens of the United States. Probably they'll have to go to jail for a while first, depending on the crime. They may end up on the end of a short rope because they're all guilty of treason. The question is to what extent are they guilty of treason? So all that has to be worked out, of course, by probably the military, because the military is involved in this. And so most cases, because it's ultimately an attack on America by enemies foreign and domestic, so it's going to be dealt with probably by military tribunals, in opposed to court tribunals. But we're putting a lot of different things together to try to bring us back, open the doors of justice. And again, a lot of the positions that we're going to be building and making and demanding is written up in memorandums. We're going to be writing a couple more memorandums probably to add to this. But you can start to get a glimpse of what we're doing, again, by going to the under federal court cases, come down to action against the judiciary. So this is an indictment on the court system, and it's not just the federal court system, because all of the state systems, they also followed suit with what the federal judiciary had done, and we have to turn things around, but that's going to take a long time. Okay, with that, again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we do have a few people in the queue, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and again, click on the button that says enter the queue. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, offer a correction, whatever the case may be. So we'll take our first caller on the mic here. It looks like Mike, you got the mic. What state you're from?
Hello, John. California. I talked to you a few times before.
Okay. Mike from California. Go right ahead.
Yeah, this is regarding my concealed carry without a permit case. I think I'm ready to move to federal court for denial of due process. I just wanted to get your opinion on it. My last court date, the judge told me my jurisdictional challenge wasn't worth the paper it's written on. The court assigned me previously a public defender, which I objected to, entered a plea of not guilty for me, which I also objected to. So that's where I'm at. I'm not getting anywhere with the state court, which I didn't expect to.
What court? Is this a state court? Because I don't remember.
Yeah, state court of California. That's
okay,
right.
And there's an indictment?
I have not seen an indictment. I've asked to see it. They just ignore me.
Okay. You got a good cause. Move to federal court very quickly. Then you may be able to win in the federal court because you're not really going up against the status quo on the one end. And on the other end, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled not too long ago that anybody can carry a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a permit to do that.
Right.
So make sure you get. I don't recall exactly where that case is, but you should be able to find it. Just search it out. I'm sure I can find it reasonably quickly, but not right now. I'd have to go searching a little myself, but I'm sure I have a copy somewhere on my computer. I don't know whether actually that court case. When I get a hold of it, I'm going to post it up. Maybe under federal courts, I think where it is, we have, landmark Supreme Court cases. Okay, so I'm going to move that one when I find it up here onto this page. So I'll try to do that during the week. But you should go find that case. Remember, make sure, did you take the course, court access in the common law?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because in that course, it'll teach you how to move a case to federal court for cause. You've got to be very, very careful, very specific. You got to make the point that you didn't make a – well, it doesn't matter on a state court anyway because they do have jurisdiction over you, so you don't really challenge the jurisdiction. But you can talk about being transferred or transported into jurisdictions unknown when they brought these things up because I'm sure you made clear to them that you have an unalienable right to carry a weapon. Supreme Court already made that clear just recently, and you're just exercising your right, and so on and so forth. Now, you got to be careful when you move into federal court for cause. You want to go after the individuals. You do never want to go after the state. You don't want to go after the county. You don't want to go after some agency or any of those things because the law is already there. So whatever they've done. When an individual steps outside of their authority, they're no longer protected by that which gives them authority. And so you want to sue the individual in their individual capacity. You've got to make that clear. You're not going to sue the state. You're not going to sue the court because the court should have done the right thing. It's the individuals abusing their authority. So you're going after those individuals that stepped outside of their authority and abused it.
Okay.
So you should have decent results probably in a federal court. And if you don't get it the first time up, then you do the appeal, you move your way up. You'll get it, especially if you can get up into the Supreme Court. You can maybe at least get heard by one of the Supreme Court justices, because each one of the Supreme Court justices, you know, oversees certain districts, federal districts, and you should be able to at least get your court case up to one of them. Hopefully you don't get left any of the socialists up there in the federal courts. And I don't think on the federal courts, you know, that you have to stay within a particular jurisdiction that you might live in. You know, they go shopping, judges. And I've heard from others that you, and I don't know this as a fact, but that you can really bring your case before any of the justices you want, whatever districts that they're covering. So, but I'm not too sure on that.
Okay. Okay, well, I will check that out, and I'll look for that the case that you have posted and run through the process. I certainly appreciate your help, as always.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Okay. Take our next call, and we only got about four people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and 1 on the phone and hit the button if you're on an app. Okay, we're going to talk to Anthony from West Virginia. How you doing, Anthony? Anthony, you got the mic. You've been unmuted. Anthony, you got the mic.
I muted myself again.
Oh, okay. Well, you're unmuted now.
I'm unmuted now. This week, something's been going on here in Mercer County, West Virginia, that we had that election May 14th. And on our election ballot was a levy, a school levy. We have some concerned citizens here, and hopefully these are people I told you about a couple of weeks ago, and I'm hoping that a lot of these people will, they're acting like they're committees of safety, but they're not really part of us yet. And so what I'd like to do is ask you, how would we go about if we have violations listed? I've got a 9-page list of codes and things that for this levy to get on the ballot. How do we go about using this proof that it was they didn't follow protocol? How do we reverse this situation? Who do we approach? Do we approach the sheriff with something? How do we go about that?
Yeah, I'm not too sure I understand. When you say a levy to get onto the ballot, I'm not understanding that.
We have in West Virginia and other states, they have what they call a school levy. It's a tax. And so what they do is they petition people, put it on the ballot, get it approved, so people say, yes, we're going to pay more money from, you know, for this out of our taxes. It's just like
a process. What's the process?
It's like signing up for a debt.
Process ballot. What is their process of getting it onto the ballot in your state?
Well, they have different things they need to do that are in a timely fashion so that people are notified. And all of this is explained in this 9-page paper that was written by the person who's trying to get this through. I sent you a copy. I sent it to mail.
Yeah, but that doesn't. I got it. I get a lot of mail, and usually yeah. a lot of people get on a national level. They get the mail, MAIL, National Liberty Alliance. If I'm alerted to it, I'll try to keep an eye out for it. I just don't remember seeing it per se. But what was the issue? Now you said something about a school. What was the issue that you're trying to get onto the ballot? Am I misunderstanding you? I don't know if we lost Anthony or I'm lost.
I'm talking. I'm still here. Did I lose you?
Yeah,
I'm still here. I'm still here.
What exactly are you trying to get onto the ballot? What is the point that you're trying to get onto?
Off the ballot.
Off the ballot?
We want to get this off the ballot. We already voted for it. It was a fraudulent thing that it shouldn't have even been on the ballot. Rules were broken. They broke their own Mercer County rules of protocol to put this on the ballot. And so what we want to do is approach somebody and tell them, look, this is wrong. It shouldn't have happened, and we need to reverse this. How would we go about that?
What exactly is it that's going on to the ballot? What is the what
money?
Is the...
Money. They're extracting money from the people through what is called a levy, then it's extending. It's extending. Money that this is for the. I think it's for the fiscal year of 2025.
So it's another tax.
Yeah, it's another tax for fiscal year 2025. It'll be effective beginning fiscal year 2025. And since it was on the ballot fraudulently, I mean, they didn't do their proper due diligence. There should be a way to reverse it, and how do we go about doing that? That's the question.
There are some things that are unlawful that go onto the ballot. For instance, they put onto the ballot in Connecticut for the people to decide, and of course they probably put a lot of information out to try to convince the people, and they usually word things in a way that doesn't even sound right, and it sounds good, but it's a negative. And that got rid of the sheriffs, and so all the sheriffs were taken away by vote. That's an impossibility, total impossibility, because at that point there's no common law at all. But they've already abrogated the common law, so they feel comfortable with that anyway. But, of course, all of that is not true. They may have claimed to have abrogated it, and they got the power, they got the guns, and they may exercise it, but it doesn't make it lawful. It doesn't mean we can't take it back. How is it worded? Do you know what's going on to the ballot? How is it worded?
Well, I've got this 9-page paper here that it would take too long to go through over the.
There's going to be something on the ballot. What's the statement that's going to be on the ballot that people are going to vote for? Do you know? Or that they did.
It's already been voted for and it's already passed, and we're trying to point out to the authorities that it should have never happened.
I'm trying to understand the language because I'm going to try to help you. There may be something. First of all, most taxes that these people put out are unlawful taxes. There's lawful taxes, there's unlawful taxes. A levy is a tax, and it sounds like it's an unlawful tax because if you can't avoid that tax, for instance, sales tax, you can avoid by not buying the item. So you can avoid a tax. So if you can't avoid it, then it's unlawful. If it's forced upon you, property tax you can't avoid, that's an unlawful tax.
That levy is the school budget. That's all it is. They vote on a budget. And so in other words, they got a school budget. And if you're a property owner, you can't avoid it because they charge everybody school tax and county tax.
That's right, and the levy is in addition to that.
They're calling it a levy, but it's the school, the budget. If it doesn't pass, then the budget, then they have to go by last year's budget. They go into what they call austerity budget.
Okay, so it's a school tax, which is an unlawful tax, which they're applying to people who own property. All that's unlawful. Look, if there's lawful way for them to get money, and they do get money lawfully, they just want more money because they want to fill their pockets up, because that's what I think is actually going on. And in a lot of cases, I know it's going on, and probably all of these cases it's going on. So you take your income tax. People think, oh, we've got to pay for it because it pays for our roads. No, it doesn't pay for your roads. Roads are paid for by fuel tax, oil tax. It's all paid for. There's many ways for them to collect different monies in order to, do what they have to do, which we gave them power and authority to do. But once they apply it in different ways it's unlawful, like a tax on property, the school tax, that's unlawful. But again, there's ways that they get income that comes in. There's a lot. Sales tax really probably takes care of most taxes. With sales tax, that money, when it's collected, it's collected through the county because each county has their own sales tax, and that is divided among the different towns, and however they work that out, the comptroller works that out and divvies the money out and so on. And there's other taxes that they collect from that's lawful. So it's all unlawful taxes. There's not much you're going to be able to do, at least not this year. If you were able to do anything to try to go after that and remove it, it's probably going to take years if you can accomplish it. But I doubt you'd be able to accomplish it under the system and the people that are involved right now. But all that's going to disappear at the end of the year. That's gone.
Okay, well, just give me a minute, John. Let me just read the first paragraph here, maybe get a little bit more of an idea of what we're doing, what the paper's about. It says, the following facts prove violations of the oath of office are elected county officials and may be considered as fraudulent and or misrepresentation by our local levying body, referred to by Mercer County citizens as the Mercer County Board of Education and Mercer County Commission, and or Mercer County County Clerk. As stated in the following, West Virginia Code 11-8-16, what order for election to increase levies to show vote, required amount, and continuation of additional levies, insurance of bonds. Then it goes down and it lists seven things that need to be done, and an order needs to be put forth, and the order was never put forth. All of these things are delineated in this paper, which shows things they did not do that they should have done in order for this to even get up to the vote of the people. So okay. Who do you approach to say, hey, you did the wrong thing?
There's one solution that you could try. Again, this is all going to be gone at the end of the year. You've got to understand that. You know, devolution is in play.
I hope you're right. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing everything come to a climax. I heard that what the judge did in that case with Trump, where they got, 39 counts against him, was it? I think it was.
34, 32.
He had them divided up. He divided the jury. I couldn't believe this. Now, I'm trying to think. I think it was Trump Jr. I heard talking about this on some program. I'm trying to think who was being interviewed by and having a conversation with. But in any event, what happened was he took four of the jurists, three divided by three, so it's 4, 8, 12, divided them into three different sections, and had the different four jurors make a decision on this, four jurors make a decision on that, and four jurors make a decision on these things. Where it's supposed to be unanimous on each one of those points, right there it's out of the ballpark. You know, Trump could shut this down any time, you know. Mm-hmm. If you recall the election with Bush and Gore, okay, they got a hold of one of the Supreme Court justices, and it was Scalia, I believe, as a matter of fact, back then. And he pushed forward, something, I forget, it was a while back. This is the 2000 election. So the Supreme Court got involved. He could get a hold of the Supreme Court and bypass all this stuff real quickly. But they're not doing it. And the reason I think they're not doing it is because they want this to continue to build. And potentially, you know, they may give him a jail sentence. I think that's a very dangerous situation. I don't know how they're going to protect the president if he goes to jail. Even if he could have a small army there, it still is very dangerous to confine the president in an area to begin with, and no matter where it's at, and let it be known. Because, you know, they have to get rid of him. They cannot allow Trump to become president of the United States, because this is the finale. And they know that it's the end of the road for them. The arrests are going to, be taking place. People are going to be tried by military tribunals. Some of them may be tried in different, regular court systems within, again, it could be federal, could be state. But again, all that has to be worked out. But there's so many, it's so big, it may all be decided by military tribunals, because this would take years and years and years to deal with all these people. I think we're probably dealing with 1 million people, no doubt hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. Gerard, do you know if there's a number out there of how many potential indictments at this point where we're at?
It's a lot. I've heard 300, and I've also heard 500,000.
Okay.
They went up a lot in the last 2 years, but there was a lot there. The first year they counted, it was, a couple thousand is normal throughout the whole nation. So that's what Durham was doing, and those guys were doing. I think when they were doing those investigations, they were writing those indictments.
Yeah, in 2017, Q said trust Sessions. I still trust Sessions. Remember, there's a play going on. They got to make people look like they're on the other side, or they dropped out, or whatever the case may be. I also believe Barr is still on the good side. I think he also is kind of sacrificing himself to a position that people hate him because they think he betrayed the president. But I think that was part of the game here, in my opinion, anyway. And I think there are still, Sessions may still be active, okay, behind the scenes, still working out indictments. Who knows? I don't know. But some people are still out there doing it, if we're up to almost 500,000, potentially speaking. But beyond that, with 500,000 indictments, you can rest assured there's probably going to be 1 million people totally pulled together. This goes down to every level, right down into the towns.
Right. That's why there's so many, because they're coming into the counties.
Yeah. It's huge. This is a really big thing. And then they got lots of useful idiots. You know, you can find them online when people ask them questions about, what's going on. Do you support Trump or Biden? And people who support Biden, and then they can't give a reason. You know, why do you support Biden? Well, they can't answer any questions because they're literally ignorant to the whole system of what they've been talking about. They've just been programmed. So, but, you know, those people are just useful idiots. It's not that they've necessarily done anything unlawfully. They're just dumb. But in any event, you can't.
Is there anything that we can do as a committee of safety to eradicate this kind of behavior?
I'm trying to tell you how to deal with this. There's one way you can deal with it if you want to do it now. It's going to be gone at the end of the year, but if you want to put your time into it to deal with this now, you could bring it into the court right away. If you can lay out all the things that they failed to do and bring that into the court, as long as you can get through that court system and not being thrown out under Rule 12, claiming that you don't have a claim of action or something of that nature.
Okay, so that means it'd be best for one of us to take the course, which we haven't done yet, but we're planning on doing, and then we know what to do after that. Is that what you're saying?
You will have a very good chance to win in a court if you can get a judge that either is willing to obey the law and apply justice, or a judge that's in a situation, because you want to try to get a lot of focus. You want to get the news going on this and everything else. They'll have to put a fixer in. And a fixer is a judge that'll come in and is willing to go to jail. And they're probably paying them very well to take that position. They're a federal court. You go into the federal courts, there are fixers. I found that in a lot of cases, similar to what I've brought into the courts, and they're big cases. And what happens is, they put them on a wheel. The judges are on a wheel, sort of spinning the wheel. You know, it's just, where does it fall? Oh, this is a judge. Okay, you take that case. They're not supposed to pick and choose a judge. But in every time I go to court, the judge that is put onto the case automatically when you pull the index number always falls away within days, and a new judge is put on. And we find it's usually the same judge, especially on a federal level in the Southern District. I've been hit with certain judges. And we've done also in Albany in the Northern District. And I found that I have the same judges that the judges fell off within days. New judges come on. And Robert Schultz, who's pushing cases, and another guy that's pushing cases, they also have the same judge that's been put on to their case. And they do the same thing. And they
Tell
you about under Rule 12, and they go through this whole process.
I hear it.
Good.
Turn the phone
off. Well, there's one gentleman in our group who suggests we just go get a lawyer. and use the lawyer from the bar. What do you say about that?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Say that again.
There's a gentleman suggesting that we just go take evidence to a lawyer and have a lawyer do it, a bar lawyer, approach, you know, maybe go to the attorney general. What do you think about that kind of
action? Well, what would be interesting, well, again, the attorney general, their lawyers, their bar lawyers, the bar lawyers, they're minions of the New World Order.
Yes.
They're marching certain things they won't do, and they will sell you down the road in a heartbeat. But if you can write a good case and lay it out and have a lawyer bring you into the case and then dismiss him once the case gets moving, then take control of that case, that's a way to get in to beat that Rule 12, potentially speaking.
Okay. So the best thing to do if we want to pursue this is to take your course and then put a case together and maybe run it by you, see what you think.
Well,
and
that's absolutely true. But remember, you know, I mean, it depends on the individuals taking the courses. You know, someone mm-hmm. is really a go-getter. Someone who is
we
like...
We have some sharp people, and the one that's leading this is a real go-getter, believe me.
Okay. Well, if you got someone that's a real go-getter... And
he
really,
prays 4 hours a day.
You got to get someone who rips things apart, comes to an understanding.
He does that too.
And it's a 90-hour course, okay? And that means you'd have to repeat those 90 hours numerous times. So you probably have to go through the course that course 3 or 4 times to really sink it down into the brain, taking a lot of notes mm-hmm. and the different things that you really need to have and know. Then you could be pretty good at this. You know, you can go through it slowly, but if you're really going to do something to try to get this done before the end of the year, they're going to really have to do a deep dive and spend their day, you know, every day working on this to get the knowledge that they need. It also has to be an individual who's interested in this subject matter. I find law fascinating. I don't find civil law fascinating. I find the civil law bores me to tears. I read in codes and different statutes and trying to understand law for different things, whether, you know, there, for instance, on the federal level, there's 57 different jurisdictions plus law, so there's actually 58 jurisdictions. But, you know, each one of these codes, these jurisdictions, apply to a different thing. You know, for instance, USC Title 14 deals with the Coast Guard, okay? So, but all this is boring to me, totally boring. I fall asleep trying to read this stuff. I go through it, I skim through things and look for things that I have to really come to an appreciation, which is on very little. USC 18, I know a little bit about, of course, it's important. USC 28, I need to understand a little bit, which is on judiciary and procedure. And what is the other one? 26. Again, that really bores you to tears. But you know, you're able to get to these things very quickly because we have search engines and we can do keywords and we can discover the meaning of the words and find the game and go down their, you know, their rabbit holes, so to speak. So I've built some really, really good defenses and positions on USC 26. They can't defend against it at all because I just use USC 26 against them totally, and it's very, very clear. They just can't do anything with it. Matter of fact, the last time they came out after me, they didn't want to take me to court because they were not going to win. I mean, they wouldn't want what I have to say and what I write onto the record, and I do believe I would win, even with a stacked jury, because I'd unstack the jury if I had to go to a federal court and deal with the jury. You know, you come in and you deal with this problem. Hang on a minute. Let me take a look at this. Okay. Yeah, USC 26. USC, what happened basically the last time they came after me, first time they came after me, I got an apology letter. I got a release of lien. And I also got a letter telling me I'm not liable for paying income tax, at least not for those years. But then they, of course, come back after me again because they want to try to get me. So when I laid my papers out to them, the best they could do is turn me over to another agency, a collection agency. So they're coming through to collect money off me, which they're never going to get, through another collection agency. Okay, so I'm going to be dealing with that a little bit if I have to this year. It's all going to fall apart this year anyway because the Fed's gone. The Federal Reserve's going to be gone. The ATF will be gone. It's an unlawful agency to begin with. There's no power, no authority for it. It's an arm of the IRS anyway. And so all that's going to be gone at the end of the year. So I may not have to deal with this IRS problem again. But again, you know, they're not going to get any money from me unless they try to take me into court, and I think I don't think they will, to be honest. So anyway, it's a lot of work. So
it is.
Good education.
You're going to see some of us there taking your course, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Good luck.
We'll see you next time. That's about it. That's all I've got.
All right. Thank you, Anthony.
You're welcome, John.
Let's take our next caller. It looks like Sean. What state you're from, Sean? You got the mic.
Hi, John. Thank you. I just wanted to also follow up on the topic of the indictments. Dr. Jan Halper-Hayes was on Elijah Streams about a couple months ago, and she said at that time that it was about 750,000. So,
wow. Yeah, I'm hearing all kinds of numbers everywhere.
So I'm the person that has...
What's your first name and your state?
I'm sorry. I'm Sean, and I'm from California, Central Coast. I was the one that emailed the question about having traffic court on Thursday. And so I really appreciate your response, and I am going to watch all the videos. But while I have you, if I could just ask you to summarize. So what I want to do initially when I get there is challenge jurisdiction and ask them to provide an indictment for me. Are those like the two main things?
Well, let me see if I can find something quickly. Education starts here. Come down to law. Move over to court forms and process. Okay. Now, I refer to these because I updated these files when I did those videos last month.
Mm-hmm.
And if you scroll down a little bit, you will see instructions forms for traffic court. Okay. Now, here are the paperwork that you want to have the paperwork get to them before you get to court.
Okay, which is going to be hard since today's the 3rd and it's on the 6th.
Well, you can take all the paperwork, get it together, and file it when you go. Make sure you have copies, the one to the prosecutor, one to the judge, one for the record, one for yourself, bare minimum 4. Okay, right. You can file this the day of the court before you even go into the court, file it with the clerk.
Okay.
Or you go down a day before or whatever and file it with the court. But you want, first of all, you want to create what's called a file on demand, okay? And this is letting them know. This is letting them know that it's a crime to not receive my paper and have it get to the judge and be taken serious, okay?
Okay.
One page of file on demand. So that you can get there, okay? The second thing you want, this is all together, you need an appearance ticket. This is extremely important, okay? And the appearance ticket is coming in, and it mainly says notice of a special appearance. Please take note that you are, whatever your name is, hereby appears in the above entitled commercial code violation by the undersigned who is appearing on his own behalf in the commercial traffic court complaint by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the court. All papers in this action is to be addressed to the address below. You put it down, whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. If you got a seal, you seal it. If not, just put the word seal there and put your name on it. Now, this is sort of your cover sheet underneath your file on demand. Then this is underneath that. This is a notice of special appearance, okay? Then you also have a notice of motion. Because immediately you're moving for a motion for dismissal, ultimately. And this is, you are hereby summoned to answer the attached jurisdictional challenge. Okay, so that's the third paper in line of what you're doing. Okay, Then the next one is the verified jurisdictional challenge, and this is written in such a way you could, it doesn't matter what code violation, but you can figure it out and make it work for that. It's important to make sure you get the town, the whatever the court name is, the address and all that up on the top, and your name is the petitioner, the respondent would be the town court prosecutor, and this is a verified jurisdiction, jurisdictional challenge. It's 8 pages. It's very precise and focused, and it must be, this you have to have notarized, so you make sure you have this notarized, okay? So the other paper that you have is an affidavit of default, ready to file that should they not answer within 30 days, and then I got some notes here and some arguments that you have to make, but I wouldn't make many arguments. That's kind of an older idea. Look, at everything's on the paperwork, Judge. You don't have jurisdiction, first order of business. Jurisdiction must be decided. That's the law, and it must be proved to exist. So he's stuck right there when you make the point that it must be proved to exist. They may say, well, look, I just decided I got jurisdiction. Well, you have to prove it, Judge. It hasn't been proved to me. Where do you have jurisdiction? By what authority? You're not going to get anywhere in court there with that. You're doing all this for the sole purpose to move. Okay, over into state court. And then from state court, if necessary, to federal court. But you should be able to deal with it in state court. That's the next process that I've already done that. And I'm going to share that information maybe next week. And I'll put another paper up here for that. Okay, and we'll see where they go. I'll also probably share some papers that the court, sent me. Because they threatened me with jail. On a traffic violation, they threatened me.
He threatened to arrest me as well, as I stated in my question, because I didn't want to sign the ticket.
Look at this is out in the streets, right? The cop stopped you and you didn't want to sign.
Correct. I was on a like a county, road, just like a 2-lane highway out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And he said that I was exceeding the speed limit. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, look, here's the thing. Here in New York, I've never had to sign for a ticket. They just give it to you. I always say thank you, goodbye, because I'm nice to the cop because he's totally ignorant. He has got a clue.
Right. And I was very respectful of him. I was trying to educate him, and I could see in his eyes that he knew what I was talking about, but he was also, on his own video cam, so it's not like he could agree with me. Well, I really felt that.
look, he didn't have to give you a ticket. But look at he has no clue. If I had to sign a paper, and I just sign it. I'm not going to give a cop a hard time. It just doesn't make sense. Why put more trouble into the problem? I mean, you got a problem as it is. They stopped you. You got to go to court. I'm not going to court. I haven't gone to this court that I filed my papers in. I haven't been there at all. Okay. When they responded back to me, I responded back very quickly. And then the next time they responded back with me, they give me a date, and they're telling me, because I told them I'm special appearance and, challenging jurisdiction. I'm not making any kind of plea. Well, they told me I better come in and make a plea. I filed my papers. I went up to the state court, got an index number, filed it in the court, served them, and now we'll see where we go from here. They did move my court date from June to July now, July 17th. It was up for June 6th. So they must have got my court papers and this to push it away a little bit. Mm. But in my paper, I put it in a very – one of the things I'm doing here is I'm not looking for anything but the court to be shut down. So my paperwork – and to be – I want to be compensated on what it cost me to file it. Cost me $5 to file it. So I want my money back.
Right.
Okay. So that's what I'm going at, $205 and cease and desist order. That's what I'm going for. But I added on to that something else because it appears that while I'm in state court, that they're going to try to pull me into their court anyway. They're just totally ignoring everything. I think that's what they're trying to do. So I put an additional clause in there that if that should happen and more damages, and I'll read it when I get it. I don't remember specifically what it means. But the bottom line is, though, that if they do pursue this and ignore what's going on in the state, then the damages are going to be great. And then I laid out some really heavy stuff that they're going to have to pay. And I'm looking for gold. I'm looking for silver. Every one of them, I'm looking for $1,000 face value silver. Mm-hmm. Money. I don't want them phony dollars, the monopoly. Mm-hmm. I want silver in coins, Morgan coins. That's specifically what I asked for. So $1,000 right now, Gerard, do you know what ounce of silver is going for? That went up pretty high. I know last time I had bought was like $17 or $16 an ounce.
Same. I think it's over $32.
Okay, so that's $32,000,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
$32,000 for each one of them, plus other damages. Okay.
Okay.
So anyway.
Well, I just want to practice my skills that I'm learning and get out of this ticket and let them know that I'm just not playing the game anymore.
Well, be careful with a couple of things. Don't get into the man on the land stuff. Don't get into the fraud. They bring something up, you can call it for what it is, a fraud.
Okay.
They're not going to bring anything up that you're going to be able to say that too. So don't worry about that.
Okay.
Don't give them a hard time. Be polite.
Mm-hmm.
And just be, you know, lay your case out, and that's the way it is, and then pursue from there whatever you have to do, maybe an appeal system and so on. But you're not going to be able to. You see, there is no appeal from a town court or a village court. It doesn't exist. You can't appeal it up the line because they're totally unlawful anyway and doing things unlawfully, and the higher courts really don't want to touch them. Whatever's going on down there, and they want to stay out. The only way you're going to draw it in is the special appearance. So you haven't appeared before this yet.
No.
You haven't appeared anyway. Okay.
No,
so you
didn't
see that paper. You can download all those papers right now and work on them. They're MS Words, so you know just click on the button to be able to do what you got and edit them. Make it yours and make sure you file it and get a copy to the prosecutor. Bring it to the clerk. You might have to serve it to the prosecutor through the clerk, because often you don't even know who the prosecutor is. So you can put it to the prosecutor in care of the clerk. And so you got one in the court and one in the prosecutor. And then you got your own copies, and then you have a couple extra copies with you anyway, because the judge's going to say, oh, I don't see that here, so I don't know. I have a copy here for you anyway. It's been filed with the court. And you can produce the papers that you filed it, because when you file it with the court, you want them to stamp the front page and give you a copy of that.
Yep.
Okay. You want it time stamped from the clerk. You don't know about this, and it's too late to do it the other way, and that is by certified mail, filing it into the court. Making sure you get a signature. And whenever you do certified mail, you want to make the point, if you're serving someone, you have to get an affidavit of service. But you can get an affidavit of service if you want. But nevertheless, you want to really file it, serve it to them, certified mail, and drop a copy in the regular mail. So you're serving it twice onto each one.
Okay.
Through the mail. And you can always serve the prosecutor through care of the court.
Okay. All right. If you have another minute or two, I have a follow-up question regarding a previous call that I made to you. Okay. So a couple of months ago, probably 3 months now, I got some guidance from you on how to file a writ of habeas corpus on behalf of my husband, who continues to be denied parole by way of denying him his right to due process. And so I don't have the documents in front of me right now, but I do remember clearly you saying that a writ of habeas corpus cannot be denied, and that's exactly what they did. They just pshawed everything that I put down on there and denied it.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
what would be the recommendation for next steps? There's got to be some way to get this man out of prison.
Yeah, there is a problem with habeas corpus. They don't want to deal with them. They've abrogated the habeas corpuses. They're just not saying it. It's one of the, again, it's a habeas corpus is a writ. It's a writ of the people, the power of the people.
Right.
And they've taken the power of the people away from us. We've had maybe two successes on habeas corpuses. That's it. And here's instructions to form, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus. It's found on the same page under Education Starts Here. Come down to Law, or come over from there and click on Court Forms and Process. Scroll down and you'll find instructions to forms to file a habeas corpus. And if I'm moving too fast, people can listen to the recording. What we've done is we have filed habeas corpuses. You said that they've ignored them.
Yes, repeatedly.
his habeas corpus is that we filed. Okay, they've ignored them and done what they please with it. There is also other habeas corpuses that we have filed other than that, and they've ignored them all. We've only had two. Here's another group of habeas corpuses that we filed. Again, non-judicial, then we filed a lot of non-judicial foreclosures. They've ignored all that because the courts are totally corrupt. You see, we've been doing this since 2015. We've got lots of cases, hundreds of cases we filed in the federal courts under our paper that we started off with was a writ for wanto. And we've been filing all these papers, and they just ignore them, throw them out, they conceal them.
So what's the recourse? What, I mean, my husband is rotting in prison, so how do we...
Well, I'm trying to tell you.
Okay.
Let me try to tell you. So what's going on here with this, with all of this, okay, this is evidence. We're proving conspiracy through the entire judiciary because whatever these cases are all over the United States. This isn't just
right.
a state in one corner. No, you have California, Florida, right. New York, Pennsylvania, doesn't matter, all over the United States. So every federal judge is working, and the state judges are working the same way, doing the same thing, breaking the same law. That proves conspiracy because they're doing it exactly the same way. Okay, that's number one. That's the key thing. Now, I'm working things out with another group of individuals and a whole bunch of other individuals from different other groups trying to work with them. But what we're doing is we're setting up a website, special website, and that website is going to be a place to collect evidence. Anybody who has lost their home, whether we've done paperwork for them or not, if they've lost their home through a non-judicial foreclosure, whether it be a tax foreclosure or a mortgage foreclosure, we'll give instructions on the website to write an affidavit. And if there's a court case open, they can refer in the affidavit to the court case by giving the court number. We don't want the paperwork from the court, but we want the affidavits. And we're hoping to get millions of affidavits. We got access to millions of people through this process that we're going to be doing this because it's connected with other groups who's going to assist in the funding of this, and there's a lot of things going on with a lot of other groups, so there's a lot of connections here. So it's millions of people that are going to get this information. Hopefully we'll get a million or half a million or whatever affidavits. Doesn't matter how many. We've got quite a few as it is, but we'd like to get hundreds of thousands if we can. And all of that is being pulled together for our finale paper. And the finale paper is a mandamus, which we're going to apply in that the law, which we're going to apply the 13th Amendment, that all bar attorneys must cease and desist their relationship immediately. And anyone who fails to do so ceases to not be a citizen of the United States. And we demand that you'll be deported. We'll deport them. Of course, a lot of these people may be arrested for treason for that, and that'll take place first. But if they escape that because they don't have enough evidence on them or whatever, well, we got the fact that they have been doing certain things. As far as being a bar attorney, a bar judge, they need to be deported because they're no longer citizens of the United States.
Right.
I don't know if you were here early enough. We read the 13th Amendment, the original 13th.
Yes, I was there. In closing, can I just ask you this? In my original call to you a few months ago, you stated that it's likely that most people that are incarcerated right now, if not all, are incarcerated unlawfully due to the courts not being, courts of order.
They've been tried in civil courts.
Right.
The civil courts is, in theory, since 1938, they've been
right.
in civil courts. But it probably took quite a few years after that before they really solidified that whole process. So maybe it's been anybody that's been put in jail since at least the 50s, but it'll go before that anyway. Look, they've all been unlawfully judged in courts that are not courts of justice, and any court that is not a court of justice cannot incarcerate you. In order to be incarcerated, there must be an indictment, and it must be by the will of the people, and it can't be a stacked jury. And
there was no jury in this case, and I mentioned all of that in the writ, and again, they just threw it out. So do you foresee the people actually getting justice at some point and being
Absolutely.
Released once the devolution is complete and all
I
of this?
Believe, I do believe that, look at every case out there is a case that's unlawful, so if mm-hmm. they want to try to retry these people, well, go at it. Other than that, they got to get out. Mm-hmm. We're going to make that point very clear. Mm-hmm. The sad thing about this is there are people that do belong in prison. There are people that are violent, that are problematic. And that's going to be up to the incoming justice system, the people that are going to run the incoming justice system, to make sure that doesn't happen. We can't do that. But we will make the point that these people have all been prosecuted unlawfully. They've been in jurisdictions unknown, civil law, criminal law. Well, criminal courts are not courts of record. They're not under common law. You don't have your rights to the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. Constitution doesn't apply because they made all this stuff up.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next caller. Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Ross.
Hello, this is me. My sister, I was talking with my sister-in-law today. She said repealing the 17th Amendment would never happen.
What? Repealing what?
My sister and I said that would never happen because the state legislatures were willing to give up their right over appointing United States senators.
Yeah, well, I understand. Look, if people find, I make a lot of claims that people find hard to agree with or understand or think that it's not possible. And I understand that through ignorance. And again, I speak to myself first because I was just as ignorant as anyone else. I still have some ignorance, of course. We all have ignorance. I mean, we can never know it all. But nevertheless, here's I'm going to make statements. There's no doubt in my mind or heart that it can't be accomplished. It will be accomplished, I believe. Okay, just going to take some time. I think it's going to happen very quickly on the other side of devolution, because we're going to make positions that cannot be argued or denied against. You can't write a paper and deny the facts that we're going to lay out. Now, here's the things, the statements I'm going to say. Two-party systems got to go. They will be eliminated. They have to be eliminated. Our founding fathers are clear on that. I'm going to make that case. I've already made that case, but I will be making it in the court. Okay, so Republicans, Democrats, gone. Look, people get elected into a position to represent the people, not to participate with party, whatever they're doing with the party, to come together collectively, because that's only to write against the left back and forth. Nothing gets done. Look, you get elected, you go, and you represent the people. That's who you represent, not the party, not a position. You're representing the people. So we got to get rid of parties. I think the person who's going to do the best job on getting rid of the parties is George Washington, President George Washington. His farewell address is very clear. He said his address was concerning the problem with parties. They got to go. They can't be. Also, there's also another picture. Well, actually gets into another democracies, being called democracies. Federalist Paper number 10. Go read Federalist Paper number 10. It's clear. Democracy has nothing to do. Our founding fathers despised democracies. It says it only accomplishes self-murder of itself as time goes on. And it really is just sets the stage for an oligarchy, which we're not a republic anymore. We are an oligarchy. And an oligarchy is a group of small group of people. There's 100 families, 200 families, whatever it is, behind the scenes that are really controlling the whole world, but they are ultimately controlling the United States, the government of the United States of America. They're pulling the strings. They're the puppeteers. They use the deep state to use that process and maybe other things that we don't even know about. But whatever the case may be, we haven't had a president of the United States since at least probably Eisenhower and Kennedy, maybe. And even before that, there was problems. Okay, there were enemies of the people that held the office of president. We know that the president right now in Washington, Biden, he's the president of the United States, Inc. The president of the United States of America is still Donald Trump. He controls the military. If you find that hard to believe, that's fine. I don't have to convince anyone. We're going to find out the truth of that before the year is out. So we're going to get rid of parties. Parties have got to go. We're not a democracy. We've got to resurrect the republic. We're a common law republic, the only common law republic in the world, which means we're under the Bible. We're a Christian nation. We're founded on the Christian principles. We're founded upon the Bible. People can argue that point. It's irrelevant. Doesn't matter. The facts and history prove what I'm saying, and I've already laid papers out on that. And that will be also filed in the courts. We want our courts of justice back open. They have claimed to have abrogated the common law, abrogated the power and the authority of the people, got rid of our writs, denied habeas corpuses. All that is against the law. It's unlawful. But well, that's our evidence against these people. And if you read the paper that we had filed, okay, let me just go back and just throw this on the screen. I'm not going to read it right now. We did look at this last week, and we'll probably look at it again in the near future. And I don't remember where the video. I did a video on this where we read the whole paper out. I'm pretty sure I did. If I did, I'll post that somewhere. But if you come and look at our writ quo, okay, this lays out the whole position of all the problems and everything that they have done, what they're guilty of. But we need courts of justice back. Bar attorneys got to go. Anybody who maintains their bar association no longer be citizens of the United States. And the unified United States common law grand jury is going to demand that they be deported, wherever they want to go. Unless first, of course, they're going to be judged and serve a jail sentence, maybe end at the end of the rope, whatever the case may be. And when they come out or if they survive from that, then out of the country they go. As far as lawyers are concerned, you know, generally speaking, same thing to them. If you're a bar attorney, you're going to have to give up your, they call it a bar license, but your relationship. So the bar's got to go. Courts of justice have to be reopened. Free courts of justice, we already paid for our courts. We don't need to pay a dime to go into a court. Corporations maybe need, and I would agree that a poor corporation should pay a filing fee, an index number, an RJI, request for judicial interventions. I call it interference, but they call it intervention. So we should be able to do those things totally free of charge, just because we're the people. We pay for the building, we pay for the computers, we pay for all of their salaries, we pay for all cost, any overhead, everything, the electric bill of that building, everything. We already pay for that. Why are you charging us money? Okay, so anyway, courts of justice must be reopened and available to the people. These things must be taught in school. Children should know by the time they come out of high school, they'll be able to go into a court of law and defend themselves. And many, many other things. They should know civics. They should understand who we are as a people. They should know their heritage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these things is what National Liberty Alliance has been working on since 2015. Actually, earlier than that, but we went into the courts in 2015, but we actually started earlier than that. We go back to 2012, I believe, is when we became National Liberty Alliance. And so we've come with a plan. Some people are impatient, and maybe we lost a lot of people over time because they think we're not going anywhere. They don't understand the plan. Maybe they're not long enough or listened enough to understand what we're doing. But we have a very deep, in-depth plan. And it was a patient plan, took time. Wasn't sure exactly how we were going to do things, but we knew basically it had to be done in the courts, has to be laid out in the courts. And when Q came in on the scene, we understood at that point, which was 2017, we understood at that point what was going to happen and where we were going to head, that there was going to be a finale focus at some point in time. And we're working on that right now. Most of that is pretty much written up. We've got to work on that, but we're also getting out to more evidence. So anybody who's got a problem, a situation, you lost a home, you've been put in jail unlawfully, whatever the case may be, I'll be letting people know where they'll be able to file their affidavits and justice will prevail. Remember one thing. I know recently someone told me the answer to this, and I just don't remember what it was. If you look at the dollar value or the number value, okay, you got millions, billions, trillions, and what's the number after that? Does anybody remember or know? Millions, billions, trillions, and then something else. Quadzillions? Quadrillions or something?
Yes, it's quadrillion.
Quadrillion. Okay, so quadrillion. This is what we're looking at. We're looking at seizing quadrillions of dollars at the end of the day here. Because as Trump said, when a diamond thief gets caught, you got to give back the diamonds. So all these people that have been living high off the land, that have been stealing money for us, all these families worldwide, all of these major corporations, they're all going to be seized, okay? And they're going to be sold off, and the benefit was going to go to the people. You got a lot of liquidity, properties, all kinds of things, okay? So it'll be in the quadrillions. So everyone will be compensated and restored, it's going to be, it's going to make America powerful because the economy is just going to go through the roof at that point. We're the casualties of war. That's what we are, casualties of war. And we've been casualties of war all our life because we've been really, suppressed and not even realizing how much we have been suppressed since we've been born. They've turned us into chattel, which is livestock. They sell us. We the people on the market. We're sold as chattel. Okay. When you die, there's a value to you. They claim it, and that's another way to make money.
Yeah, John Dress. That's probably because it's through the birth certificate. They use the birth certificate as the chattel use.
That's correct, and they're selling us on the market.
Yeah. How do you claim that document away from them?
Well, it's called a SESQ account. Everybody, when you're born, there's a SESQ account created, and you have a certain value. And as you live life, your value goes up. And I imagine, depending on what you do for a living, your value becomes higher or higher in different areas. I really don't know how all of that works, but I presume that that might be the case. But what was your question there about that, Ross?
How do you claim it?
Oh, you don't claim nothing. No. You don't claim nothing. It's going to be seized control. Money will be given back to the people. Look at this. They robbed it from us. I should be a millionaire. I really should with the work that I've done, the jobs that I've done. But they've destroyed everything. They've destroyed. They just keep going on. The economy gets worse. Everything problems. More problems with the government trying to get things going. As a contractor, they put a lot of penalties, a lot of weight on you to prevent you from doing things. Especially if you're in, if you're out there really building out subdivisions or building buildings like Trump did and high rises. I mean, there's a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of problems, and a lot of people don't survive through the big jobs. So,
John Josh, I think with the, you know what the foundation of Rough Creation is?
The foundation of creation?
No, I mean Rough Creation.
I'm not understanding what that, what, say it again, Rough Commate, what is it?
No, Rough. Is Tell there it. Be Rough Creation?
Roth?
W-E-A-L-T-H.
Oh, wealth. Okay, wealth creation.
Yes. What is the foundation of that? It's what land. It's land is where you have all the wealth from.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. Land.
But they took our land away from us, and they're making a lot of wealth from their land.
Absolutely. And we ourselves as an individual is our first piece of property that we own. It's entrusted in our parents, and until we become of age to be able to handle that piece of property, which is your body, your flesh. And it's the same thing, of course, with private property when you any kind of a piece of land that you take control of. But you're right. That's correct. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah. Also, the wealth. Our founding fathers created a land wealth, a land trust for us. Is only way you can get that land is through the land patent process.
Well, the land patent process, you know, whenever you have a piece of land, there's got to be a patent for it, which is really the definition that defines the location, the property lines, the point of corners, and all that information. That's pretty much, I think, what the case is with that, to define a piece of land. But to go any further than that, I know a lot of people are trying to do something beyond that with that process, and it's really not necessary. The only thing that's necessary is to move your property from one point to another to private property. So if you're in residential, okay, residential, the way they set things up with those terms is taxable, okay? So you pay your property tax if it's residential. But if it's private property, that's all you have to do is change your name of the property to private property. It's an uphill battle because they don't understand it, but you've got to go through and really push it forward, maybe even take it into the court. But if you can turn your land into private property, it's removed from the tax rolls.
That's the land patents. I think it's because you have to buy the purchase of public lands, then it becomes public property.
Well, when a piece of property is subdivided and sold, it's already patented. In other words, all the property lines are already established. It's written up, and there are, you know, locations wherever your land is, where there are certain markers, and they relate off of that, elevations and all kinds of information. All of that is established, and that ultimately, in my understanding, really is the production of the land patent, which is putting all that together. But that's already done. You know, I was a general contractor. I did a lot of developments, all kinds of developments, subdivisions, worked with people who are investing money to build these subdivisions, developers. And one of the things you do is you break the property up. The piece of property is purchased, which already is patented. When you break it up into subdivision, each piece is created on its own parcel, and a patent is created. So it's already there, really, the information necessary in order to...
Oh, yeah. I think it's just you have to put it forward, not really get a new land patent. It's you are pulling it forward, basically.
Well, again, it's already defined. You just got to, like, but the big thing is changing the name, residential or commercial property, which is the two major, you know, things that they say. This is either residential or it's a commercial property, and that is all taxable according to the way they set it up. You don't want to have a residential property. You want to change it to a private property.
I mean, change it from commercial property, change it from commercial law and private law.
Well, commercial is a problem. Maybe I never really looked deep enough into it, thinking about a commercial property. Well, even with that, you can't really tax commercial property, but they do anyway. But you can.
They want to make money.
Yeah, you can change that into private property too, and as well.
So they refuse to do that because they don't want the loss of power over the land.
Well, even if it's zoned for commercial property and you change it into private property, you shouldn't have a problem really doing commercial business on that property. But even from the other standpoint, you know, I think you can argue, I don't know that there's any way that they can require a piece of property being a commercial property or not being a commercial property. Developments could be created for the sole purpose for only people to have private property to live on. But that doesn't mean you can't run a business out of the home that you own, or even make a small building to have a big building too, I guess, to do commercial business if you wanted to. Doesn't seem to make sense to be doing it in we'll call it a residential area, but you want to get it out of really being called residential and bringing it to private property. I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough to really make any more of a statement more than I've had on that.
Basically, we need more help from people to help you research that kind of stuff.
To what? What was that? To get what? To do what?
For National Alliance to understand commercial law to able to switch our property back to private property.
Yeah. Look, to do it should be simple, in my opinion.
The cloakroom refused. That's the problem now.
Yes, because you're saying this is my property. It's private property. I want it established and put down on the books as private property, period, end of subject. They will bite you tooth and nail, you know, and I have never made a plan.
Yeah, if they do that, they should go to prison because that's breaking their law.
Well, yeah, they break laws all day long. They should all be in prison, in my opinion. I don't know of a judge that can survive what's coming up. I really don't. I think we're going to lose every single judge. I think we have to, you know, unless you really find a judge that has been applying. But I don't think they could last very long. Remember, to be a judge, you have to be approved by the Bar Association. There is a requirement, and they're going to look deep into you. They know who they want to have as a judge and who they don't want to have a judge. They want to be able to control these people. So that's the problem. I don't know that there's a judge out there that can survive what's coming up.
I think it's not the judge, it's the county clerk who's responsible to with the land record.
Well, it's that's true, and they're ignorant too, and yes.
We need to train those people better on that.
Well, first of all, we've got to train everybody better because we have to give a better education that teaches the common law and who we are as a people and what our heritage is. That's what we got to do in school. And I'm looking at the time. We got to be moving on. Okay. We've got a final point because we do have a few people in the...
Okay. I yield.
Okay. Thanks, Ross. Okay, we're going to have to move a little quickly. I apologize for that. And, you know... People come back next week, try to get in first early if you need more time, but let's see what we can get to now. It looks like we got Richard, I think is the name. What state you're from?
Richard, North Dakota.
Okay, Richard from North Dakota, you got the mic.
Hey, just to follow up to the last couple of conversations we've had on this judgment that I have, and FHA, all that stuff. Anyway, I did get a copy of the judgment from the Quaker Court, all the documents that were supposed to be there, and there was a lot of things in there that I just jumped out at me. There's a proof of personally serving me. I thought, well, that's going to be an interesting trick to prove. And it just by a sheriff's department, whatever, did one of them. One of them was by mail, proof that they personally served me, and I circled personally. I was out of the state, out of the country. How can they? Could I challenge that? Even though the judgment, I wasn't there. I got no notices ever. All these notices they said they sent out, I never received a single.
Was there someone at a place of business that you run that received it? Was there someone at your home that you were done received it?
Negative.
Okay.
The address that they had was a storage unit.
And you haven't been served per se. It sounds like it, but it's a difficult battle to fight.
But I would think that if they're going to say if they mailed it, I mean, I used to do this when I worked in the bank. If I got a judgment, I would kick it.
Well, they have if they mailed it, they have to have two things. They have to have an affidavit of service, so you've got to ask for that. Where's my affidavit of service that I've been served? That's number one. If that doesn't exist, it's over with. Okay.
There's an affidavit of service in there, but there's no proof that they mailed it.
Well, that's the other side.
What I did is I'd do certified return receipt request. That way I had proof I mailed it.
Hold on. The affidavit of service, was that done by a lawyer?
No. Wait. Let me look at here. Hold on a second. There's a couple of them in here. I have it here.
See, if an affidavit is by a lawyer through the... the mail system, and they don't get certified mail, which they should get certified mail, because they're officers of the court, they hold positions of trust. And, of course, we can't trust the lawyer. You know, how can you tell if a lawyer's lying? His lips are moving. It's that simple. And that's
exactly.
Because lawyers are nothing but liars. It makes me sick to my stomach. Everything that comes out of their mouth is a lie and a twist, you know. But in any event,
one of them was done by a lawyer.
Yeah, so they're going to say
affidavit of default.
Yeah, they're going to
say was served personally herein. There's no doggone way in God's green earth to serve personally.
Well, if they have a date that they served personally, then you can turn around and prove that you weren't even in the country at the time. That's a whole different thing. But with that, we've got to move on to the next person. We could talk more next week if you want.
And but, then, well, I just want to say, if this thing is declared fraud, can it be dismissed without having to go through a judge, or is it to go through a judge?
Well, first of all, you got to prove that you didn't get it. Unfortunately, with it should be the other way around. They got to prove that they gave it to you, okay? And if you were out of the country and they're claiming you were served personally, and you can show, look, this is the date they claim I was personally served. There's a fact I was over here at the time. There's no way that could have happened. The whole thing is a fraud. Got to start all over.
Yeah.
And that you should be able to get any judge to do. Not that they're going to do it.
Yeah,
because remember,
I think we have a few judges here that are still kind of. Well, the thing is that I went through the North Dakota Sentry Code, and they put down a list. They made a list of things that you had to have, you had to do, in the proof of service, two or more persons having a joint or common interest, blah 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 blah. But if you haven't, they had in there that if you're going to mail the proof of service, it's got to be more than just somebody saying I did it. You know, like a certified.
Yeah,
that's
well,
what I had to do. I got taken to court, they never got it. I said, well, it was mailed, and I documented what I did, plus I had a certified return receipt from the post office that it was delivered.
Yeah, but it's got, and this was for what? To file a motion or to file?
It's a contract. It was to get judgment,
okay.
Which was done.
Okay. When you have to get an affidavit of service, that affidavit of service has to be someone who's not part of the case. Okay,
right.
I usually use a friend or one of my sons, and I have them take it to the post office, and then go down and we write an affidavit of service, and they get it notarized, and then I got it, and I do it. And here in New York, which is rarely pushed, but they've pushed it on me in a couple of times. I've learned from bad experiences. the school of hard knocks. What they do is here in New York, you really need to not only serve it that way, you have to serve it, and we do it certified. So affidavit of service is supposed to be sufficient, certified anyway. So we have the certification through the mail. We have the affidavit of service, and then we also have in the affidavit, it's written up that it was both mailed by certified mail and just dropped in the mail, so it's mailed twice to each of the defendants. So,
the whole list on here,
we got three more
it
people.
Says an information instruction for service to start a district court civil action. Declaration of service, I didn't get it. Declaration of service by personal delivery, didn't get it. Declaration of service by mail, didn't get it. Declaration of service by main petition, didn't get it. Admission of service, did not do that either. Admission of service, did not have that either. I mean, everything
all
on here,
it
was like
do,
a control contract.
Listen, all you got to do is get an affidavit writing down the facts that you could never have been served because you were over here while they were claiming you were served over there, and whatever proof you can get, attach it to it, go down to the court, talk to a judge, and ask him what you need to do with this. Is he have the power to throw this over? And because I don't know, you might be able to do it that way, who knows. But you may have to go in and actually file a paper and go through the process. Ultimately, the judge should be able to deal with that, really, because that's unlawful. But I got to move on.
Quick question. If all, I need to know this. The thing was turned over from the bank, and the creditor was a bank, and it was a contract, a revolving line of credit, and it was given to an attorney firm, and then it was given to another attorney firm, and all this stuff. But the one thing I want to ask about this, and on the document itself that they did provide, I've never seen this document. In fact, the date of it of the form was 10 years after I actually had that account opened.
I can't discuss it anymore because we're out of time. If you want to talk some more, we'll have to do it next week. We got three other people here, and we just hit 11:01, and I want to close down. So, if you want, we can continue next week. All right.
Okay. All righty.
Thanks. Only going to spend a minute with each person, and again, hopefully next week get into the queue early. Jeff from PA, hopefully it's something simple. Go ahead.
Go on.
Yep, Jeff.
Um, I'm a member of a committee of safety here in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania.
Great.
We have a web Rumble channel, and you probably talked to our chairwoman, Roslyn. But if people want to visit that, it's paaccos.org. Just to show the example that we have an established and functioning committee of safety, we have a charter, we have a co-chair, we have a secretary and a treasurer, and I actually composed our first full resolution. We haven't presented it yet because our chairwoman wants to procure X amount of signatures, I guess, to validate it. I don't know if that's necessary or not.
Well, it's not really necessary. You only need the only signature that's necessary is the chairman. So you don't need to tell how many members or any of that stuff at that point in time. But the other thing is, did you talk with Jan or connect with him and get a list of people in your county and within your state so you can contact them?
Well, I did contact a few people that were, out east. Eastern Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but
we
can give you a list of all the people in your county and your surrounding counties. So if you send a request to Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org and ask for a list of people in your state, and you'll get it by county. So the people that are in your county, you can contact them and try to invite them to your committee of safety. And what I would also do is invite people in the counties surrounding your county to invite them to your meeting to discuss getting the committee of safety starting in their counties. Because power is with numbers. United we stand, divided we fall. You know, we don't have enough help to really make contact. And a lot of people that are building committees of safety haven't really made direct contact with us, per se. And we need to get that going because some people that may have started committees of safety think that they can do this on their own. It's not possible. We can't save this nation. Divided, we fall. You can't save your nation on your own. When our founding fathers put the United States of America together, they were colonies. There were 13 colonies. They knew that they had to collectively come together and work on problems. They had problems within their own colonies. They dealt with their own business, however they wanted to deal with it. But there were problems that affected all the colonies or some of the colonies, and they had to work together. So the 13 colonies came together. They created committees of safety. Each colony created a committee of safety. They came together, sent representatives, and that's how we became the United States of America. That was the process. The committees of safety continued. They're the original committee men. We know that they called the committee men, with political parties have seized control of that. The Bar Association has statutorized them. They have total control over the whole process. They've oscillated the powers. There's party bosses, and it all just fell apart. And it is not the process that our founding fathers used. So we resurrected here, as I know you know, the committees of safety the way our founding fathers did it. It's the people. We're not limited to numbers. We don't have to get voted in. This is how you have government by consent, and everyone can participate. They also limit the number of people going into the committee men. For instance, in my county, there's 149 election districts. There's one person for every election district. But in a committee of safety, we can have 1,149 people. It doesn't matter. We can have 2,000 people. The more, the merrier. Many hands make light work. And everybody has a right to participate in government by consent. And you participate. There's only one way to participate with government by consent, and that's through working with the Committee of Safety. Anybody who thinks they could do it any other way, they're only deceiving themselves, or they've been falsely come under a false understanding. It's not possible. But we have to unite. So when a Committee of Safety is created, there has to be communications. Our founding fathers put together where they had subcommittees. The subcommittees did different things. One of the subcommittees was a Committee of Correspondence. The job of the Committee of Correspondence was to move information back and forth to the other colonies. We've tried to teach people to do the same thing. You have a Committee of Correspondence. You want to communicate with the counties around you, eventually the counties throughout the whole state. But you also want to communicate and work on different problems and situations and possible solutions. There may be more than one state from state to state, because we have to deal with the federal government. And we may come up with two or three solutions as we look at things. And, of course, we'll offer solutions, and other people will offer solutions. And then each state or each county will decide how they want to go forward. But we have to work together. And if we don't do that, and we think we're an island, and we can, no man is an island, but if we think we're an island and we could do this as an island, well, that island's going to sink. So, but with that, I got to move on, and we could talk more next week if you want, Jeff.
I look forward to it. Thank you for giving me a couple minutes, and I look forward to trying to get back on next week and go into details.
Yeah, get a hold of Jan and just ask for the list of the membership in your state, and they'll send it to you by counties. You'll get phone numbers. You won't get emails because we don't believe in emails. You communicate by phone. It's got to be person to person. Okay?
I agree. Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Okay, Brett. Okay. Brett, you got the mic. Give us your state. Only got
Hello?
A minute. Go ahead. You got it.
All right, John. I'm listening to what you're saying about devolution and how all this is going to go away. So I'm just trying to determine whether or not this is where I should spend my time. So that being said, I have I just received another citation in the mail for my daughter, and it's again, it's another one of those vague.
I remember you.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I remember. We had a conversation. Good.
Yeah, so now that this is it, there was no damage to property, nothing physical, and they just want some more money out of me. So this is going to be the second summer in a row dealing with this village, these courts, and last summer was for my
daughter. Well, you can challenge their jurisdiction.
Okay, so question is this something that give my time to, or wait till after the year is up and go after everything that they have done?
Well, you could do it that way, too, and you'll get some loss between now and then you can go back to seize back what you have lost. So, of course, again, the key thing is opening up courts of justice. One of the big problems, and I mentioned this already, is I don't think any judge is going to survive this, but we don't need judges. That causes a problem in equity, but it doesn't necessarily cause a problem in courts of law, because we need, you know, all we need is a magistrate. And there are all kinds of different magistrates. You know, all judges are magistrates. And when they sit in the court of law, they're supposed to act as a magistrate and not as a judge. Of course, they do what they please and they take control. But they're all going to be gone. A sheriff or a coroner can run the court as far as being a magistrate. But there are all other kinds of magistrates, you know. So we can continue our court system that way. You know, it is true that judges have the background to have certain understanding and knowledge of certain things, but look, a court of law really works on logic and justice. So as long as we use common sense and justice, you know, whoever is running that system making sure that it is justice and that it is focused, and you know, then anyone could really run a court. We own the buildings; that's our buildings. So we just got to get a magistrate. We don't need a judge. So yes, it can be done. You know, everyone's going to get compensated very quickly, immediately. That's going to really charge the economy at the same time. Because remember, seizure is going to be taking place. And, you know, I heard that right now there's something going on. They're looking to send some money out to people, another $1,400 check. And this is the Biden administration doing this. But that's the type of thing that might happen in the beginning once the Fed is gone and the Federal Reserve and we change the economy back to gold and silver. That's the only lawful form of money. It's in the Constitution. Gold and silver is it. That's what we got to go back to. But yeah, America's going to prosper. Everyone's going to prosper.
Now, do you think that they're going to just look at every case that took place up to this point and make that deciding factor? Or?
Well, I think what they're going to try to do is get people to just sign off and just put a certain amount of money out there. Certain considerations might be, for instance, just as being one of the people, a certain amount of money, I think. Again, I don't know how this is going to go, but this is the just thing to do. And they're going to seize all these properties and monies. They got to do something with it. It would be a wrongdoing for the government to use it in some way. What would they use it for? They got to give back to the people. They stole it from us. Our lives have been destroyed, ultimately. But the thing is this. I think what will happen is everyone will get something just as a general thing. Okay, and remember, the United States, we are the people of the United States are not the only one that have been injured. This is the people of the world, so it's not all ours. They've been injured too. But I think economically speaking, we've been injured the greatest, put in prison and all kinds of things when we shouldn't be. I mean, all kinds of problems. But then there are other nations that have been, people have been, really, really injured, living like slaves and, just terrible. But in any event, I think what will happen is everyone will get something, and that will be just something to move the economy along, and just the fact to say you've been injured and this is something. Now, someone who's lost a home has been injured more than a person who hasn't bought a home. There's going to be certain things that, and some things are going to be hard to discover what the amount might be, and they may come up with some arbitrary number and say, and maybe even put on some kind of a scale, possibly. I don't know how they've worked that out. There's a lot of ways to look at that, and I think that people are going to get a certain portion according to their injury. But if you don't accept what is offered, then you can take it into court, make the argument, potentially get more, or potentially possibly even getting less than what they offered. So who knows? So we'll see how it goes, but we would have to, at some point, list our injury, and every injury would have to have a value, at least some type of an arbitrary value, and then adjustments could be made in an argument in a court if you wanted to go that route. I think that's how it's going to happen, but it's got to happen some way. It's almost like the Jubilee.
Okay, last question. Now, on the citation, when it gives a description, it's got under race and ethnicity. They have it totally different than what it is in the school records when they were registered. So how do you think is the best way to deal with that? Identity mistake?
I'm not understanding what you're saying. Are you saying they identified you as a certain type of an individual as far as a race?
Yeah, yeah, and it's not what's in the records at school. So I guess when an officer is writing down something that's totally different than what the demographic is in the school, how would I address that issue?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that. I would need more information, and maybe we can talk another time about that. I just don't have enough information on what really you're saying and how I should appreciate it. So, but I do have to move on to two other people. It's, and we're really over time. I really got to get moving. So, but we could talk again next week if you want. All right?
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right. Again, I got to go this quickly. Two more people. Sandra from Arizona, you got the mic? Only got a minute or two. Got to move on. Sandra from Arizona, you got the mic. You've been unmuted. Last call for Sandra, Arizona. Okay, Tzok, it looks like, if I'm pronouncing that right. Chicago, Illinois. You got the mic.
Hello,
last call.
Tzok, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I was calling to kind of pick your brain a little bit of what you thought about possibly encouraging some of these encampment efforts that are protesting the genocide in Gaza to get together and perhaps learn about committees of safety and grand juries.
All right, but you said something about Gaza?
Yes, there's encampments on a lot of campuses throughout the nation and internationally, protesting, taking over buildings. I believe in Mexico this week, they burned down the Israeli embassy. In San Francisco yesterday, they took over the Israeli consulate. So there are people openly doing guerrilla warfare research and holding meetings on social media. So in a sense, the revolution has begun.
Well, the revolution actually was still fighting the original revolution, believe it or not. It's still the same enemy, ultimately always has been. And it's the richest families of the world. Nations to do what they do to take control. They did it in Britain, they did it in the United States. They've done it everywhere. But I'm not sure I understand your question, though.
So what do you think about introducing ideas of committees of safety, grand juries, to these encampment efforts?
The committees of safety are separate from the grand juries. It's a wrongdoing to put a grand jury together that's seated and doesn't have an end term. You know, you can't put a committee a grand jury and just have them sitting forever. Number one, it's only for a small period of time. That's number one. Also, you have to have a well-informed grand jury, so someone has to orientate them. So someone has to be educated in order to orientate them. We have dealt with, when we first came to an understanding that the grand jury is the major solution here, because we've been a unified United States common law grand jury that we established back in 2015, and we've been a sitting grand jury since then, but with the intent to be sitting as long as it takes to deal with the problems with enemies domestic within our own government, particularly in the judiciary, but not just in the judiciary, in government everywhere, whether it's a town, village, city, county, state, or federal. We have enemies throughout the entire nation, at least a million of them, maybe more. I have no idea the numbers. We just heard tonight that there's about 720,000 indictments, and there's a lot more than that. We've done indictments. We've done a couple of hundred indictments. They need to be dealt with. So there's a lot of indictments out there to deal with that particular problem, you know. But no, the committees of safety need to be working on the committee of safety. You should develop a judiciary committee, and that judiciary committee should be able to deal with people coming in with judicial problems as far as complaints against the government or, you know, town, a city, but whatever the case may be, some agency. And maybe you'll have the knowledge and the ability to be able to deal with it. Maybe they need the grand jury. Then they could be referred over to the grand jury. We're trying to establish administrations for grand juries in every single county, all 3,134 counties in America. And we need at least four administrators plus one paralegal. So a paralegal will be an administrator too to fill in, but basically doing the paralegal work. So we'll have five individuals for every county that need to take place and take control over the grand jury within that county, or grand juries within that county. They need to orientate them, and then they need to be the watchdogs to make sure that the court system isn't abusing the people. That'll be the authority and the power of the administrators for the grand jury within that county. They should be seated in the court, and we need to take it away from the judge and the prosecutors, because they've been controlling it. And that's what we need to do. So committees of safety do not develop grand juries. They don't have the knowledge. And it would be a wrongdoing, because they'd be doing things without knowledge, and that would be injurious.
Okay, and I guess one final parting question or point. With regards to the U.S. funding Israel, right, on the behalf of Zionist interests controlling both, would you agree so far?
With what's going on there, the only solution to what's going on there is only one. It's Trump, and I don't know any more than I can say about it. We shouldn't be funding anything anymore, in my opinion. But, you know, there's a major problem over there, and I don't know that there's really any one good way to deal with this. The whole thing is about creating war.
Israel, but then that's, right, that would stop, that the genocide would stop.
If we what?
Well, I was referring to the corporate United States.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, what's the, I missed what you said, something about funding Israel.
Well, if the United States stopped funding Israel, stopped sending technology, right, weapons, information, I mean,
well, I'll be honest. I think the problem is too complex that I don't understand enough of it to be able to. It would only be an opinion, and my opinion wouldn't necessarily be that based in knowledge, maybe a little bit of knowledge, but again, it's too complex of a problem. I will tell you that problem is going to disappear at the end of the year. That problem, the problems of the world.
I don't know what you mean, but we understand, you and I, that Trump is a Zionist, correct?
No, he's not a Zionist.
Okay, well, perhaps we can have this conversation another time. But I'm very firmly of the belief that he is. And I mean, he filled his cabinet with Zionists, right? He took hundreds of millions from Rothschild agents. I mean, this is, I think, extremely deep and broad.
Yeah, I don't know that is true. There may be some situations that may be true just because, you know, when you're dealing with... one of the major problems that Trump had is he didn't know the lay of the land. He didn't know who the enemies really were. A lot of people that were not...
Robert Maxwell, right? The father of Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the handler of Jeffrey Epstein.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure he was very connected. I don't think he was naively amongst the sharks that we've established in previous...
Oh, Trump was directly connected?
He was friends with Robert Maxwell when Ghislaine Maxwell got arrested for child sex.
Well, I don't know. First of all, I don't know if it's true. Look it. First of all, I don't know that that's true. Friends is one thing. A friend is someone that you do deal with all the time on personal levels, maybe get together from time to time. You talk often on the phone. You have that kind of relationship. I don't know that Trump had that kind of relationship. Did he have some kind of relationship because he was an individual of power at a certain time? Possibly. I don't know. That doesn't mean he understood what was going on. I know as soon as he found out who and what Jeffrey was.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know we're limited on time. Hypothetically speaking, if you were to be compelled to believe that Trump were a Zionist, would that change your position with Trump personally?
Well, first of all, that's a kind of a loaded question, and, you know, it's not a question that could be answered, because if you're saying that he's evil, would I still support him? So, of course, you know, if he was this, then he's evil, would I still support him? How do you answer that question? I don't know. You can't answer that question. Either he's good or he's not. We can't talk anymore, but we can talk at another time if you want. I will say one thing. I'm going to bring the Bible into play here, okay? You know, I'm a student of the Bible for quite some time now, and I do know certain things. We're very close to the end, to Judgment Day. That day is very, very close. And the Bible talks about at the end, or close to the end, that man will say peace and safety at last. I do believe that next year man will be saying peace and safety at last. Next year will prove that one way or the other. But there are other signs and other things that are immovable. You can't move them. And it only happened in one generation. And those things happened in this generation. So all of those things are in play. So that brings us to a point in time. I see Trump as a type of a Cyrus. I don't know if you know who Cyrus is in the Old Testament, but he's a king that freed Israel and helped rebuild and bring the, you know, rebuild the temple and bring Israel back into their nation. God obviously raised up that Cyrus to do that. Well, I believe that Trump is a type of a Cyrus raised up. You know, he appears to be coming closer to Christianity. He's saying the right things. I don't know his heart, though. But he doesn't mean that he have to be saved in order for God to use him. You know, God used, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bible, but God used the dumbass that spoke to the prophet, who was a false prophet. You know, so God can uses anything in order. He raises up kings and brings them down. So anyway, there's a lot of signs that are here that things are going to happen.
Sure. I mean,
we're going to find out. Here's the thing. Whether I'm right or wrong, we're going to find out in a year.
Yeah, so as far as the Bible goes, the only lineage I've traced genealogically was the Rosebush lineage using the William Cooper's Mystery Babylon series and Wikipedia. And after 10 minutes, I stopped at Constantine, right, who held the Council of Nicaea that determined what books would make up the Bible. But I was wondering if you were aware that in 1917, Zionist interest amended the Bible with the Schofield edition to introduce the idea of Israel.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether we could take the conversation much further, at least not tonight. I don't want to get too deep into that kind of a conversation. But just as a general response to that, okay, what you're telling me is you're telling me that certain men are more powerful than God. Because if the Bible is the Word of God, then that message is coming to his children. Faith comes from hearing, and hearing from the Word of God.
My message is secular in nature. That's how I intended to deliver it.
Okay, well, my message ultimately is biblical, because our entire government is based on biblical principles. The Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God. We ask God to be under his law, the laws of nature and of nature's God, and we ask for the blessings of his liberty. And when we that's the preamble of the Declaration of Independence. And when you go into the Constitution, there are six directives to government agencies and government agents that they're supposed to adhere to. Anything they do is to fulfill at least one of those six directives. And one of those directives is to secure the blessings of liberty. And so therefore, liberty is a blessing, comes from God, established ultimately in the Bible, of course, but it's established between America and which is the United States, and God through the Declaration of Independence, which again, as I said, is a covenant with God. It's an agreement with God. No man can break it. And they're about to be judged. God is not going to permit this to happen any longer. Remember, this is God's nation. This is the place that the Bible talked about, where we're prepared for the wilderness for the woman, which is the bride of Christ, which is the body of Christ, which is the churches. And it was prepared a place in the wilderness for them, and that's here, what's through the churches here in the United States, and being a Christian nation. And Christianity flourished from that, and it flourished throughout the world. And the man has interfered with that, and altered it, changed it, corrupted it, and continues to deny God and to bring in other things other than the biblical principles. And God is going to judge that. There's no getting away with it. The Bible is absolutely clear. Before he comes, he's going to judge nations. It's coming up. We'll find out within the next year. It'll be clear one way or the other. So, but with that, we'll talk another time if we want.
Thank you, John. Take care. Good night.
Okay. All right, good night. All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Sorry we went over. I really try not to do that. I didn't think I'd come 28 minutes over, but here we are. All right. Good night, everybody. Hopefully, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday.